Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell. Guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today I have Ron Price on the line, and he's founder and CEO of Price Associates. And Ron is a return guest. If you haven't caught some of the previous work that we've done together, definitely want you to go back and check that out. But just to start off with, hey, Ron, welcome back to the show. Great to see you again.
Adam, I'm really happy to be here. So thank you for inviting me.
So lots and lots to cover today. So I want to talk about, we'll talk about the leadership journey, what that looks like, entry level career, mid level, then moving on into that executive level. And you're definitely an expert on leadership. You have multiple books that you've authored and co-authored. And you also have one, not to spoiler it, we're going to go into it later, but you have one coming out in January also. So lots and lots of things that you're doing. So glad you made some time for us at Mission Matters. And just to get us kicked off, I'll start this one like we start all our shows with the Mission Matters Minute. So Ron, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. So that's our mission here. Ron, what mission matters to you?
You know, a great mission sounds really simple, but it's the result of a lot of hard work to get there. And I know that's the case for yours. For me, what I came to is that I believe my purpose in this world is to help people discover and pursue their greatest potential, and particularly to help to grow great leaders, because I think that it's the great leaders that solve the problems that we face today.
Man, that's amazing. Love bringing mission-based entrepreneurs and executives on the line to really talk about why they do what they do and what motivates them. So thank you for sharing that. And just to get started, so maybe, you know, some people that didn't catch our previous work together, let's just start with your background. So like, how'd you get started on this path of really being a leader in a leadership space?
I think as a young boy, 8, 9, 10 years old, my grandpa inspired me that your life can make a difference for other people. He used to tell me story after story after story of his work. And it was never focused on the dollars. It was always focused on what kind of a difference you can make. And then as a young man, I went into business with my dad, who was a lifelong entrepreneur. Yeah. A lot of people think of entrepreneurs as being people who want to make a lot of money. And of course, my dad never refused any money, but it wasn't the thing that drove him. What drove him was being able to live his values out in the way that he treated his employees, in the way that he treated his customers. Mm-hmm. And I saw in my dad that your life could be authentic. It could be rich. It could be fulfilling in the context of business. So that's really what got me started. And now that was a little over 50 years ago. Mm. My dad's passed on now at just short of 94 years old. But there's a part of him that still lives in me, because the joy I get is this balance between treating people right, having a noble purpose, and having great performance as well. So I don't diminish money. I just want to put it in context of that you get it as the result of a noble purpose in serving people.
No, I love it. And that idea of just as people, like the goal is to really to add value, right? So you're adding value to the marketplace, you're adding value, building value for yourself and your family through building the business. And ultimately, you know, giving value to the people, your clients, right? Like for whatever that service is that they choose to exchange money for, that you're adding value for, right?
Yeah. And of course, that can sound very philosophical and maybe even unrealistic. But fortunately, in my life, I've been able to apply it in very practical ways. Yeah. I've had leadership roles in 10 different organizations. I've started, I don't know, three or four or five, maybe six different companies. I've been in corporate executive roles. I've had the chance to serve as CFO, chief marketing officer, chief operating officer, president. I've really had a wonderful journey, but it's all been built around that core that we're here to serve others. And when we do that well, everything else takes care of itself.
So that idea of the, and I love one of the things that you bring out, and that's kind of one of your focuses, is that it's not necessarily a trade-off. So meaning you can add value and you can have that servant mindset and still make money. So that's not a trade-off. It's not saying that you have to do that out of just some altruistic like manner. I mean, like you can add real value there. What kind of advice would you give to maybe some of the people out there that are still kind of that mindset that maybe it's a trade-off? Like you can't do good, make money. You can't live the values and make money. Like you have to be one way or the other. Like what kind of things would you tell them?
I think the first thing, Adam, I would say is that if your focus is only on the finances, you're actually increasing your risk of failure. The finance, I look at profit and loss statements. I look at balance sheets every month. They matter to me, but they're the postmortem. They're the result of what happens after the things that you did. And if you do those well, then those profit and loss statements and balance sheets should look good. So it's not the ignoring of the finances, but it's putting it into the proper context. So my advice would be to realize that actually your greatest earning potential, your greatest potential for wealth creation comes from paying attention to the other things. And in this particular case, I think the other things are people. So it's your employees, it's your customers, it's the community that you live in, and your purpose. Why are we doing what we're doing? You said it earlier, and you said it better than I could have. Business is about creating value for others. It's not about getting other people to give me what I want. Yeah. As Zig Ziglar used to say, you can have anything you want if you help enough other people get what they want. And I used to think that that was kind of a trite, superficial cliche. But as I've gotten older, I've realized how true that is. It's at the very core of a kind of success that you can be proud of at the end of your career.
Man, Ron, love it. And love Zig. I'm like, see you at the top. You just reminded me about that. I haven't thought about that in so long. See you at the top. I think I'm going to revisit that after I like to play something in the background, a little audible thing. I'm going to revisit that one. It's been a while to hear Zig. Awesome. So the leadership journey. Now, there's a lot of different ways to say this, and just for the record, so this is one of the ways that I think of it. It's like, okay, you start out, let's just say maybe entry level, then you kind of get mid-career, and I don't mean it has to be middle market in terms of companies. I just mean your skill set grows, right? And then you get to where maybe you know some more things, and then you maybe get to that executive level, and then you're maybe running a company or something else like that, or you're within a company, or maybe you decide to become an entrepreneur and take some of that skill set that you've gained along the way and to find new ways to add value. So a lot of different routes that can go. But I'm interested to hear your take on that leadership journey.
Well, first of all, I like to think about a leader as being somebody who influences others, somebody who has now, some leaders are good and some leaders are bad. So some have a good influence and others don't have such a good influence. But assuming that we aspire to be a person who has good influence with other people, it begins by how do I develop myself? How do I become the best version of myself? And then from there, I can actually take two different paths. One path is what I refer to as the organizational path, where you're learning how to lead others, and eventually you're learning how to lead organizations. Or it can take more of the technical or expert path, where you decide you want to be somebody who's a world-class expert. Yeah. And you could say that going for the Nobel Prize is that, or it could be that you're going to create some new product or service or some new innovation that in its own way is going to change the world. Those are both leadership journeys, but they require a different kind of understanding in order to optimize your influence. So in either of those, I have seven ideas that I think of as the entire journey. The first idea is getting the invitation. Either somebody offers something and you volunteer, or they ask you. And honestly, for my 50 plus years of leadership, it's always been that somebody asked me to do something, and I wasn't quite sure that they were that smart when they were asking. So that goes from the invitation, it goes to awareness. As a result of you taking on the responsibility, you get to know yourself better. Mm-hmm. And that introduces number three, which is development or growth, where you begin to become a better version of you because of what you're carrying now. And that leads to validation where other people recognize it. And they actually are a very important part of legitimate self-confidence because you need other people to be your mirror, so to speak, to tell you that, yes, you are moving in the right direction. The next stage after that is now you have the opportunity to optimize your impact, because at some point your influence becomes bigger than you because of the brand you've built, because of the people who support you, the people who are part of your team. And that leads eventually to mentoring, where you begin to recognize it's not about me. It's not just my impact. It's how do I invest in other people? And that takes us to the seventh stage of the leader's journey, which is reflection and celebration. Mm-hmm. So whether you go the organizational route or the technical expert route, those seven things still happen for you if you're going to enjoy the full spectrum of the leader's journey.
So I wanna go maybe a level deeper on some of these concepts. So first off, I want to start with the idea of the invitation. So you're in, and how you started that journey, because I think it's funny, number one, that you say, like, I have to ask, like, why are people asking me to do something? Because there's some people that are going to, like, they're going to hear that. Like, as soon as you said that, I thought about some times in my career and just in general, I'm like, why did they ask me to do that? Like, what? Like, or like, am I being voluntold, or like, what's going on here? Like, I didn't want it. Like, there's other people that wanted, like, so how do you deal with like that responsibility on that side of things? So when you're asked to do something, and when you're taking on or potentially either saying yes or no to the opportunity, like, how do you start to deal with that?
Well, first thing is that people wouldn't invite you if they didn't see something in you. And sometimes they see something that you don't see.
Yeah.
And the one concern that we should have is the thing that they're asking me to grow into going to help me become a greater and a better version of myself, or is it going to derail me? Because as a part of our journey, oftentimes we are going to have to say that doesn't fit.
Yeah.
So you do have to make that judgment. I think it's important to remember, Adam, that nobody's ready for the next position completely. And I think a good sign that it's a good opportunity for you is if it spurs excitement around the opportunity, but sobriety around the challenge. So I like to say you've got this mixture of excitement and fear. If that's the right balance, it's probably a good opportunity for you. You do have to validate that it's in alignment with how what you know of yourself right now, what you know to be. For instance, some people are more task-oriented, other people are more people-oriented.
Yeah.
If you're very, very people-oriented, be careful about accepting an invitation for something that's all tasks, or vice versa. Some people like to move quickly. Other people like to be very deliberate. Again, you have to know yourself well enough to know best how to respond to that invitation. But don't think that it means that you've already mastered all the skills you need, because that's part of the joy of the journey, is stepping into something that you're not quite ready for, but you're capable of doing.
That's where the stretch comes, right? That's where the growth also comes. And that's where I believe like your skill set, like it's like you're going to the gym, you put on a little bit more weight, or you're doing a hike and you decide to go a little further than you normally would. And just that little bit extra, like that's where our true growth comes from.
Yeah. That's where you really find where you're at and where you have the opportunity to grow, which is why I say you go from invitation to awareness, because there are things about yourself that you don't really understand until you step into that next responsibility that you've been offered. Mm-hmm. And I will say there's a way that you can prime the pump for those invitations, and it's about how you lead yourself. Mm-hmm. So our first job in that journey is to think about, who am I? Who could I become? And what are the habits? What are the mindsets? What are the aspirations that are important for me to begin to develop so that people think of inviting me into another opportunity?
So I want to skip around a little. So One of the steps that you mentioned was talking about like optimizing and what it looks like to optimize your process or yourself as a leader. Tell me a little bit more about that. So that would be, and am I incorrect in assuming that that's for somebody that's maybe been in a leadership role for some time and now they're kind of like maybe mid-level in their career? And I don't mean age. I just mean like they have some experience under their belt. Is that appropriate?
Yes, we might come back to this. I don't know, but I think of there being three different spheres where you develop your leadership muscle. Mm. The first sphere is your character. It's how you show up. It's how you behave. The second sphere is your expertise. What value do you deliver? What do you know? How can you help? And the third sphere is your position. The interesting thing about the positions that you're given in life is that you can never own them. They're always on loan. They're a stewardship. But they give you the opportunity to amplify or optimize everything that you've been working on in your character and your expertise, because the position actually, especially as you move on in your career, the position becomes bigger and bigger, and it actually becomes a great blowhorn for you. Mm-hmm. We call that, when we talk about politically elected leaders, we call it their bully pulpit.
Yeah,
it's that we recognize they have a bigger audience, a bigger voice. Mm-hmm. And when I really saw this was that I was the president of an international company with offices in 8 different countries. Yeah. And when I would travel to those countries, I got red carpet treatment. Mm. The hospitality people, everybody, our employees, everybody treated me great. I retired from that business in 2000, and I discovered that it only took about 6 months. And when I would go to the same hotels, the same place, people would say, "Ron, who?" Because they had been serving the position, not the person.
Yeah.
So when I retired from that position, when I gave it back, I gave back the blowhorn. I gave back the bully pulpit or the amplifier. So I, in a way, I feel like it's a sacred responsibility when you've been given a position of influence to use it well and to use it for the common good, not just for self-interest.
And that word, that word responsibility, like that's a big one, because it is a responsibility and it's tricky. I think as you grow into different stages of leadership, and I guess from our end, we're, you know, in the media industry. So as our platform grows, as things grow, but if we look at your business as a platform, if we look at whatever your role is or wherever you're at, that gives you whatever amount of influence it is, it could be, it doesn't have to be media or, you know, on the news or anything like that. But I mean, it's influence among the individuals that you're, if you're a leader, that you're stewarding. And that's whether you're, you know, a sole proprietor and you have your first like virtual assistant that they're looking for you for leadership, or, you know, going all the way back up to the extreme example that you mentioned, where you're the CEO of a multinational corporation. And there's a lot of people depending on you. Like these are all different levels of leadership and responsibility that come with it. I know I can speak personally, like for every step and every rung we've grown, it's like, it gets heavy, like it's heavier and heavier, because it ultimately comes back to you as a leader to be able to, you know, people are depending on you. How do you kind of deal with that end on the responsibility? Like, where does that fit in this optimization mindset and process, especially with the understanding of, if we circle back to a previous point you made, that we're never 100% ready for it, right? We're always growing. Like, how do you work on that responsibility side of things?
I think that one of the great aspects of this, Adam, is how do you avoid the minefields? Because as you get more and more influence, we could also say you're getting more and more power. And we've all heard the phrase that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah. So why in the world do I want that? Well, you made a great comment. You said it gets heavier the further you go. I think the key to it is to remind yourself that you are not the position. Mm-hmm. You are not the business. You are not your reputation. Mm-hmm. You are, first of all, your character. And secondly, you are your expertise. Mm-hmm. So the best way that you can protect yourself from the corruption of power is to continually recognize, I have to work on my character every day. I have, in our book, Growing Influence, we talk about these three different spheres of influence. We talk about your circle of control, the things you can take 100% responsibility for. Mm-hmm. And if they don't get done, it's nobody else's responsibility. It was yours. The second is your circle of collaboration, where you need other people's help. And the third is your circle of concern, the things that are outside of your reach, but they steal your energy. Mm-hmm. Well, your circle of control, when I think about somebody being strong in their leadership as the weight gets heavier, it's like weightlifting around character. So what am I going to do to keep investing in my character, not to depend on yesterday's character, but to recognize that the more responsibility I have, that character is the foundation that will either hold strong or it will crack. So I spend 2 hours every morning. I'm very grateful that at this time in my life, I have that time. And I, every morning I spend time investing in me for those 2 hours. I have my wisdom reading. I'm a person of faith, so I pray. I have a different group I pray for every day. I listen. I build a gratitude list every day because I know that it's so easy for me to lose my sense of gratitude for everything I have. And then I look at what is it I want my character to reflect today? How is it that I want to behave? I want to govern my own behaviors. And I begin with courage. And after courage, I think about humility and what that means to me. And then I think of purity of mind and heart and body. What am I going to feed my mind today? Because my subconscious makes most of the decisions. So what kind of nutrition am I going to give it? And then from there, I go to personal accountability and self-management. And finally, gratitude. These are my values by which I want to govern my own behaviors. Then I reflect on what are the values by which I want to relate to other people. And I start with collaboration. And what does that mean to me today? Collaboration is not delegation. Collaboration is partnering with people to do something that we're both passionate about. And then I, from there, I go to empathy and I go to forgiveness and candor and loyalty. These are all the values that I want to reflect my character. Now, the question is not whether or not I have them defined. Yeah. The question is, am I closing the knowing-doing gap? Because we all have an aspiration that's further, or at least we should, an aspiration that's further than the way we've actually, what we've actually become so far. So when I talk about you've got to work on your character, it's not, it is about being honest and having integrity and being ethical, but it's not only that. It's about a lot more than that. And the question is, how strong can you build your foundation? Because that is what's going to dictate how much weight you can carry without crumbling under the pressure. So the bigger it gets, the more I need to focus on character. And then after that, I have to focus on expertise because you can be a character leader, but if you don't know what you're talking about, you're not going to help anybody. So you got to decide where you're going to go deep in your expertise. And then you have to decide, I'm going to aim for being world-class in that area of expertise. And those things have served me really well. And they've helped me when I get into positions to have a reservoir to draw from. So that the position doesn't capture selfish ambition or greed, but the position continues to look to me like it's an opportunity for service.
Absolutely amazing. And I love, you're dropping so much wisdom today, Ron. Always great to talk to you and to bring you on because I'm like, I'm hoping that the audience is getting filled up by your words and your dedication and obviously your passion for what you do, because I certainly am. Speaking of which, I want to go further into Price Associates. So I want to spend some time also talking about what you're specifically doing day to day. So maybe again, for those that didn't catch our previous work, maybe just start off by telling us a little bit more about the company.
Yeah, we started in 2004. And today we have about 25 people who work with us in different places around the world. And our job is to help people grow themselves, to help teams grow and be effective and help organizations, especially organizations that are going through growing pains. And we do that through executive coaching, through facilitating different kinds of events, through consulting work. We have three main practices that we use that help us with that. The first is how we help people think about and understand talent. So we use a whole series of self-administered assessments that help people develop deeper self-evaluation, deeper self-awareness. Second is we do a lot of work in the space of innovation, helping people think about creating new value. And innovation isn't just about products and services. We can innovate our processes. We can innovate how we show up in the marketplace. we can create whole new markets. So it's innovation across the whole spectrum. And then our third avenue that we work in is strategy. So it's how do we help organizations develop and optimize their strategy, especially in a time of disruption like we're going through right now. Mm. And in the context of all those, it's we're helping people to become better leaders.
Mm. And so what are the, and there could be, maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but are there specific niches or industries that you work with? Like who gets the most value typically out of working with you and your team? Or is it like size of company or like, give us a little bit more on that end of things.
We actually work across all sectors and all industries. So we do a little bit of government work. We do a lot of nonprofit work. Then we do a lot of business work. However, and also all sizes, Adam. I mean, we work with companies that have 10 employees up to 40,000, 60,000 employees. But usually those larger companies were working inside one of their divisions. Mm-hmm. We don't very often work at the corporate level, mainly because of the way that we're spread out. Now that's changing a little bit because of the virtual world that we're in today. Mm-hmm. But I would tell you that where we have our greatest impact is a company that has somewhere between 100 and 1,000 employees. Mm-hmm. And there are a variety of reasons why I think we can make the biggest difference there, probably more than we could go into today. Mm-hmm. But that's where we found that we can have the greatest impact. And we're really strategic partners with them. They become our friends and people that we care about for life, regardless of whether we keep doing work with them 5, 10 years from now. They're people that we care about and we stay in touch with long after we've completed a project. Hmm.
So there's some people watching this right now that they maybe have never worked with a company like Price Associates, or maybe they have worked with others and maybe it was a great experience, maybe not so much, but either way, a lot of people that are on different ends of the spectrum on this one. When do companies normally know that working with a company like yours is a good fit? Like, how do they know when it's the right time? Because I feel like sometimes people hold back a little, or they're like, I don't know if we're ready, or I don't know if this will work for us. Like, how do people know?
The biggest reason that people know it's the right time is they have a vision of where they want to go that's exciting to them. Hmm. They don't quite know how to get there. Yeah. Or they're facing some kind of a big obstacle that they recognize is holding them back mm-hmm. from achieving their potential. So a lot of times we'll work with companies who are saying, you know, my leadership team just isn't gelling. Or I have to think about succession and I really haven't given it much thought and I would benefit from having an outside voice or an outside pair of ears to listen to what's going on. Or people who recognize, I want to have a dynamic strategy. I want it to be more successful in the execution side. But I recognize that for me to play my role as a leader inside this company, I need somebody from the outside who can help guide that process. Those are the places where people, if they're experiencing that, they know, yeah, this is the time to talk to somebody who has expertise outside of your company around these issues of people and strategy and how you continue to innovate. Mm.
Now, I know it'll be different, right? From company to company, obviously size of company, industry, like, you know, internal processes, infinite variables there. But what is a typical like user journey look like for somebody that you do start an engagement with, just to give people a feel for what that would look like?
Yeah, that's a good question, Adam. It starts with a conversation. Mm. And mostly what we want is to understand that organization and the leader. We want to understand their aspirations. We think it's really important to get a good picture of what they've done well, where they've excelled already, and then to talk about where do they want to go. And sometimes that's 1, 2, 3 conversations. Yeah. Usually the next stage is we go into a period of diagnosis, where we're trying to understand with a little bit more depth the dynamics, the things that are working well, why? How could we leverage that? The things that aren't working so well, what's the root cause? Can we get down to the bottom of understanding it? And then once we get through that section of diagnosis, then it's usually pretty clear to us whether we're going to be a good fit, whether what we have to offer is something that will benefit them, and whether they think we're the right people to help them with that. And from there, we go ahead and create a calendar and a list of commitments, and we lay out that map, and then we follow that map and see where it leads us.
That's great. And again, this again will change from company to company and from experience, but what are some of the common themes that tend to come up? Because you've been in this business for a long time, you've been helping people for a long time with this. Like, what are some of those common themes that, you know, you can say like it comes up time and time again, and sometimes those are some of the starting points to work with?
Yeah, communication. Mm-hmm. I always joke, if business got slow, all we have to do is start talking about communication. Of course, business has never gotten slow for us, but really how people work together and find ways to find real synergy where we really do create a better result together. That's something that is never ending because it's so tied to the human experience. And of course, that relates to how are we going to organize, who's going to be responsible, how do we know who to put in different roles? And we use a whole series of assessments to identify people's natural strengths, how they've developed those into skills, how they can be applied in different scenarios. Yeah. So that's a big one. I think a second one is, how do we create a beautiful future? Mm. And that has to do with understanding who our customers are today and what they want, and who our customers should be tomorrow. And then what is it that we provide? And are there other ways that we should be partnering in order to help our customers achieve what they want? Ultimately, every business, although the business serves the employees, it serves the owners, mm-hmm. the business really exists to serve the customers. Yeah. So that is a never-ending experience or journey because customers' interests, needs, passions are changing, and especially in the world that we live in today, which we refer to, and I'm sure you've read it other places, as a VUCA world that came from the U.S. Army. It's a world that's volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And boy, if we didn't believe we were living in that kind of world before, we know for sure that we're living in that world today. So that would be the second one. And then the third one, again, is why we've developed what we do around this practice of innovation. Somewhere up to 93% of all innovation initiatives fail based on research. And it shouldn't be that way. Now, I don't know if we can get to 100% success.
Yeah.
But what if we could just get to 50% success? Big. Or 60 or 70% success. And a lot of companies are frustrated because they either don't have new ideas or they've tried lots of ideas without getting the results they hoped for. Mm-hmm. And so those are the three big things that we see: dealing with people, understanding what your future market's going to look like, and really creating a beautiful future through innovation.
It's awesome. So Ron, I mean, first off, this has been great, like having you back on the line and just learning from you and seeing what you're doing and just happy for what you're doing with Price Associates and the success and how many companies you're managing to touch and at various stages of their growth. So what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Price Associates? Like, what's next?
Well, one of the things that we're taking a big risk on, Adam, is that traditionally, a lot of our work has been face-to-face and very high personal interaction.
Yeah.
And we're not finished, we're not ending that, but we wanted to ask ourselves the question, could we deliver value to people in a way that was much more economical to them? So we have stood up something called the Complete Leader Community, which is a membership organization where you join with an annual fee. And then you have access to a lot of the content that we've created through the years for the people who want to do it yourself kind of work, mm-hmm. or people who want to develop themselves personally, but they might not have the purse strings of the organization's budget. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very affordable. And people who become a part of the Complete Leader Community have access to over 700 resources that we've created: videos, podcasts, coaching guides, articles. We have 30 live events every year online that they can attend, which are discussions with authors. We'll have you on sometime. Mm-hmm. And discussions with experts in different areas of interest. And then they also have access to online skills assessments for themselves so that they can work on developing their skills. So that's one thing that is, we're really breaking the traditional consulting business model by creating a lot of value that is almost free for people to access. And we're excited about that because we believe it gives us the chance to serve a broader audience. Mm-hmm. As I said, we'll continue to do the more personal work that we've done over the years, but we our real desire is that community will create a tremendous amount of content, global connections and friendships, and opportunities for collaboration that go much further than anything we could have done otherwise.
Oh, that's amazing. And this is one of the of us being in this video or whatever age we want to call it. This is one of the amazing things. And what you're also doing is really just creating a brain trust, really. It's like all of this content, all of this knowledge that, as you mentioned, as you as you're in the beginning of our interview, that these positions are really stewarding, right? Like you pass that on. So now I can see, and getting back to what you said about Zig Ziglar earlier, it's like, or you brought him up. I mean, he really, like, his knowledge, his the content he put out there, like obviously he wasn't, he's an author. That was his business, to be on stage as a keynote, but like the traditional role of breaking that model of a consultant like yourself, and now creating that brain trust and creating that content where in the past it was only like a Zig Ziglar or like somebody that that was their business was, you know, semi show business, right? In the same sense. But now it's like the people that are in the trenches, the people that are actually doing the work day in and day out. By you doing this now and you creating this content, not only are you, you know, being a good steward of the knowledge that you've gained over the years, but now, you know, in coming generations, they're going to be able to build on that. They're going to be able to kind of carry that torch forward and to kind of push the envelope, as they say, a little bit more on all that. I think it's amazing what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. We're trying to be very specific in thinking about how can we serve early stage leaders? How can we serve people who are young in their career? Mm-hmm. And then how can we serve mid-stage leaders who oftentimes have much more responsibility in leading others, in executing successful strategies and things? And then finally, how can we be very intentional and specific in how we serve senior leaders? Mm-hmm. So we're really focusing on what is it that we can do that helps them be successful? Mm-hmm. And how can we deliver that to them in a way that's meaningful to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. This is great. So I don't, before we get off the line here, 100%, you got to tell me about this book, as I mentioned in the beginning of the interview. So you have a book coming out in January. Congratulations. We're recording this right now in October of 2021. So the book comes out January of 2022. So tell me a little bit more about how this project came about.
This is my ninth book, Adam, actually, and five since I started Price Associates. And something I learned early on is that when other people help me write books, they're always so much better. So I've really adopted this approach of collaborating on books. So I wanted to write a book on strategy for many years because I've worked on and studied strategy way back into the late 70s. I never felt like it was quite the right time. And then one of our associates, Evans Baya, who co-authored the book, The Innovator's Advantage, with me, introduced me to a professor from the University of Nairobi, who his expertise is IT, but his passion is strategy. And he's done strategy work for 70 different organizations across East Africa. And we just started spending time together. Evans and this fellow's name is Tim Waima. We call him Professor Tim, and myself. And we talked through an outline. We had some discussion. And then in March of 2020, we said, okay, it's time for us to get serious. So we started having a 1 to 1.5 hour meeting on Zoom every Friday morning. And 35 meetings later, we had the first manuscript, which we submitted. And immediately, Inc. said that they would like it to be an Inc. original imprint. But they said it needs some editing. So we had tried to keep it real trim, and they said, no, we need to have more color. We need more stories. So we went back to work, and it took us another 6 months to go through their suggestions and then send it out for some early readers to evaluate. And I'm so excited about this book because it captured everything I wanted to say about strategy, but also so much more. We identify seven distinct stages that you go through in preparing for, creating, and optimizing strategy. And all through the book, we have templates, worksheets, exercise. We want to help somebody go through step by step how to develop a robust strategy that's also flexible and opportunistic, but it stays true to the organization's foundations, which of course are their purpose, their values, and their vision. So I'm really excited about it coming out. The early readers have told us that they've not seen another book about strategy that's quite like this. And so I'm excited to see how people will use it. And this, you know, because you're doing it every time you record these interviews, publishing is such a wonderful gift because you have no idea where it's going to go once you've completed it. And that's part of the fun of the journey.
Yeah, it blows my mind. Like when somebody reads something or that you wrote, or they come back or they quote you or something else like that, whether it's in a book, whether it's a keynote you did, whether it's a interview, like you mentioned, I mean, it's like creating this content and trying to be of value matters. It really does matter. And you can really help a lot of people. Even if you sometimes don't think you have it all figured out or this, that, nobody has it all figured out. Like everybody's an expert or a master in something. I've had some of the best things I've ever read were about somebody's failure, and me reading that taught me some things. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like they helped me by sharing their story of what didn't go right. So I tell people all the time, the main thing is to share your story, whatever the platform is, whether it's publishing, whether it's interviewing, whether it's a Facebook Live. I mean, nowadays it's just, you can share your story. You can share what you're good at anywhere. So I think it's great what you're doing and that you're in your ninth book, I believe. Said
yeah.
Oh, and, man, that's amazing.
I'll reciprocate that and say I really think the world about what you're doing, Adam, because you're publishing in video.
Yeah.
And we have no idea where that's going to go. And this is the way we make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So Ron, we both know I can talk to you all day long. A million questions come up once we get on the line, but we're about done for today in terms of our time. So that being said, if somebody is watching this and they want to learn more about Price Associates and to connect with you and your team, what's the best way for them to do that?
Our website is price-associates.com. So it's price-associates.com. My email address, all you have to do is put Ron in front of that. So ron@price-associates.com. And if they want to look at the Complete Leader community, that's at completeleader.org. Mm-hmm. Those two places, they can get hold of us. And they can always reach out to you too.
Oh yeah, we're here. So shoot us a line. We're in. And we'll put that information, of course, in the show notes so our listeners can just go in and click on the button and head on over to the site. So first off, just again, thank you for coming on the show. And everybody that's watching, thank you as always for your support. If this is your first time visiting, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We definitely have more mission-based entrepreneurs, executives, and experts coming on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Ron, again, it has been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure for me too.